I need to type faster. I can't type that fast. Literally, I'm a packer, so, and it works. I'm a packer. I just call myself a dick. But
welcome to the Two Authors Podcast, an entertaining chat show hosted by best-selling mystery and thriller authors Douglas Pratt and Nicholas Harvey, in lively, humorous, and informative conversation with distinguished guests who share their thoughts and experience about forging a successful author career.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's show, where our guest will be Steve Higgs, who we'll get to in a little bit. But first, let's kick it off, Doug, with a listener question.
Yes, sir. Well, today's listener question comes from Branson, Missouri, from Miss Charlene Rose. How do you keep track of all the characters in a long series? You have a long series, like 15 books long. How do you keep track of them?
I don't. I screwed up. I think generally it's referred to as a Bible, not the Bible, a Bible.
A Bible, a series Bible.
When you
Bible.
Track your characters. Yeah, a series Bible, and that way you track your characters and stuff. So I did not do it right out of the gate. And when you get deeper into the series, I've made multiple attempts at going back and trying to gather up all the names that I've used. And especially because the way I write my A.J. Bailey series is dual timeline, so you tend to have the main characters that are reoccurring. But then you've got these all new characters a lot. So I've done a crappy job of it. People keep claiming there's software and AI stuff that'll go through and mine the character names from your books, but I think you just tried that.
Yes, they don't work. Yes, I had heard from I think it was Joanna Penn who talked about how she could upload her books into ChatGPT and it would spit out all the character names. And so I uploaded like four or five of the Chase books, which was an ordeal anyway. But once I got it uploaded, then I was like, okay, now give me a character list. And it would give me Chase's name. His bio was wrong, but then every other name, it just made up. And so
it just made up names.
Names. I was like, I don't know why people are worried about taking over. It's not going to yet. But
It's like a naughty kid in class, really. You never know when they're telling the truth.
Right.
Or
it was like, I'm
coming
like,
up
no,
with bullshit.
No, yeah, that's not going to work. I'm the same way. I didn't start early on. I should have. I do keep most of my books, only have one or two, maybe at best four recurring characters. And even then, most of the time, it's just Chase. And he just goes back and forth. But I have a few side characters that show up every couple of books. So it makes it a little easier.
So the moral of the story.
Start early. if you're starting a book that you think is going to be a series, keep a character list at least, and you can work off it. And Scrivener does a great job. If you write in Scrivener and you create character bios, it's great for going back and pulling those if you give a bio to every character. A lot of the side villains that get killed with one scene, I don't always give a character to, but
So that's kind of interesting. So I have my reoccurring characters and their bio in pictures and all the stuff I use for them. I add to it when there's a new fact.
Yeah, I've started with Chase and a couple of J-Delp and Missy and a few other. When I add a new piece of information, I try to add that to them. But yeah, for the other side characters that are going to kill, I don't always.
So what I do in Scrivener is I've got the main characters and then I do current characters in each Scrivener folder for that novel. So within that current characters, I put in every character now that's in the book. So to create the Bible, I can now go back and grab those characters, and I just haven't gone back and done it yet. And of course, I only started doing that about
a quick side question for you then. So like, do you have, like for me, I have like henchmen that show up regularly that don't have names. And Chase tends to give them a name like, oh, he's the fat one, or oh, he's the bald one, which describes me both of them.
You're just as bald, but you're less fat than you were a year ago.
Yes, I am. But do you have tricks to keep up with characters that don't have names but show up like henchmen in your book?
Good question. If they're given any kind of reference, then I tend to put it in the current characters. So if he referred to as the
boat driver,
Scarface or something. Yeah, Scar. Then I'd put that in under Scar.
This is to drag on a little bit longer than I thought, but have you ever pulled a name out that you just didn't remember and then realized later on that it was somebody you actually knew that you're like, oh, crap, I didn't mean to use their name. It wasn't intentional.
Oh, so the name fell into your head like, oh, that's a good name for a character, but it's someone you knew? No, I've never done that. No, no.
Also, I had it happen, and the guy who read my book, he's like, oh, you made me a character. And I was like, yes, I did.
Yes, I did. I do it deliberately.
I have done it deliberately. For people. But I've never done it. That was the only time I ever did it where I was like, first and last name, pulled them both. I was like, they were common names, but they were, still.
Right. You know. What I have done several times, and I just did it in what I'm writing right now, is I have a character and I start going, that character comes back in this scene here, and they haven't been in the scenes for 10 scenes. And I'm like, they did such and such and everything else. And I'm like, wait a second. And I go back to look at something else in the previous chapter, and I've changed their name.
Oh, yeah.
So I called them something up here, and they called them something different up there. And I just figured out doing that. And then you have to do search document and find all the places that you buggered it up and make sure they're the same.
I accidentally published one like that where I switched names halfway through. Yeah, I was.
I forgot a dog existed for like 6 books. I had a dog in a first book, and then yeah.
Well, anyway, let's move on because we're going to talk about this for a long time. Yeah, this is going to be great because this week's guest, he has written more books than I could count. Like I sat down last night, I tried to go through them.
Well, that's 10. You can only count to 10 because you ran out of fingers.
That's true.
He's written more than 10 right. books. That's what you just said.
That's true. Fair. Okay. Well, he does have more than 10. He has like, I don't know, upwards of 100, but he writes these quirky, cozy mysteries, paranormal fantasies. You're going to love him. He's a fellow Brit, so you two can like gang up on me. It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. 2-1. We got you.
Welcome, Steve Higgs.
Well, thank you.
We're 2-1 this week. We got two Brits against the Yanks. So
I know, yes.
Doug is going to be screwed.
I'm sure it's a friendly environment.
It is generally, yeah. I usually just have to tell, Nick, we don't eat baked beans over here for breakfast and that kind of thing. So,
that's your loss. So, Steve, tell us a little bit about how you got into writing. You certainly didn't come from a writing background, did you not?
No, I guess no. I guess my background, if you like, is military. I was something like 7th generation military. I went into the army at 17 with very little choice in the matter. But I won my first award for writing, creative writing, when I was 10. And I think had I been born to different parents, I might have gone down the author route some decades earlier. But yeah, I was a soldier for 25 years. So that's my background.
Army?
I was army. Yes. All of that in a very busy period.
So my main character has a military background, so I'm always interested by the military. But do you have any great military stories that you had that have translated over to your books?
No.
Okay.
Was that a helpful
Wow,
answer?
That was great. No, man.
I've got a lot of anecdotes that generally revolve around drunken soldiers in public environments. There's training stuff that comes into it, and the character that I started writing, I guess the beginning of my career, and actually I'm writing his 23rd adventure right now. He's ex-military. I decided to write a lot of myself into that character. I think because it was just easy to base it on me in many ways for ease of writing, if nothing else, at that point, right at the beginning of my career. But otherwise, no, I mean, I've not written military books. I've not written military characters. It's just that one who happens to have been an ex-soldier.
So you got an award at 10, then you went 25 years in the military. What brought you back to writing?
Constant irritation, I think, as much as anything else. Yeah, I was one of those people who kept saying, I'm going to write a book. And I wrote a column for a military magazine, and I wrote short stories, and I doodled words, and I was constantly doing stuff. I had one of those kind of away with the fairies minds that was not particularly well suited to the military, despite the fact that they kept promoting me. I struggled with concentration. I still do, because I was always off imagining something else happening where, wouldn't this whole situation be much more interesting if a wizard came through a portal?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. So it's not just me that thinks that way. That's great. That's how all of us writers end up with.
So yeah, I had that all the time. And it was, in the end, having years of these stories kind of piling up in my head, I just got bored listening to my own voice and stopped talking about writing that book and just sat down and wrote it. It took me 5 years. Because I transitioned out of the military. I mean, that started right at the end of my military career, and I transitioned out of the army and into the corporate lifestyle where I wanted to kill people even more than I had done when I was young. I mean, was no longer allowed to.
Right, yeah.
They wouldn't pay you to do it now.
Yeah, I've got all the skills. I can kill everyone in this office. I guess that's how it got started, was I needed to write, almost to exercise this demon within myself, and found the process, found it just very joyous. I was creating characters and having a lot of fun putting them in these scenes and describing them. And when I guess when I'd finally wrapped up that first manuscript, well, that was 5 years. 5 years pretty much start to finish, and it took me 5 months to write the next one, and then it was kind of one a month thereafter.
I was going to say, you write fast, too. So for jumping from 5 years to, what do you have,
I mean, 5 years for the first one, and now you're like, spit them out.
I actually tried to count them last night, and I was like, I can't keep up. I keep losing count. So, I mean, how many books do you have out now, right now?
That I have penned singularly by myself, I believe I've just finished number 89. But then there's another 40-something co-authored.
And you've been a full-time writer for how long?
4.5 years, I guess. It was September 27th, 2019.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Handed in my resignation. It was that, or, you know, there was just this one day where I was packing my lunch and I couldn't decide whether to put a nice fresh tuna sandwich into my box or an axe. And I figured at that point it was probably time to stop.
I think I had that boss too. Yeah. I got to that point where I was like, nope, I'm done. I just can't. Yeah.
I'm out. Thank you. So I left at that point, and that was September of 2019. I cut the parachute strings at that point and went into free fall, and it was very much what can I do with this if I'm doing it full time, and set myself a target of 30 books to write in 12 months and failed by one. I only got to 29. I'm going slower now. I have slowed down. You know,
okay, so you slow down a little bit now, but that's impressive.
That's partly pressure of the business, because as everything's picked up, there's more marketing to do, there's more advertising to do, there's more stuff. I get invited to go on podcasts now.
That's right. Yeah, that's fair.
No, who's this idiot, Steve Higgs? What's he want?
I think that's the other way around. Yeah. People are going to be like, why'd you go on their podcast?
Well, yes, it will reflect badly on me in the future.
Oh, probably, sure. Yes. So you write this fast. I mean, do you plot at all, or do you just pants the whole thing?
I don't know who the killer is most of the time, and I'm a surprise to some people. Even when I have an idea, it tends to work out to not be that person, it's somebody else. And so people say I write fast. I wrote a cozy mystery in 4 days.
How many words is that?
45,000, I think it was. But I write 10,000 words in a day without any particular trouble.
Really? I can't type that fast.
Yeah, people talk about writing sprints, and I don't really understand what it is, because I just sit down and I have to get up at some point, because I either need to eat or I need to pee, one or the other. And I have thought several times about getting a commode so I can eliminate one of those.
That's wow.
This is my writing room. That's a bathroom. No, it's my writing room.
Well, I mean, people say how did you do all this? How did you write so many books in such a short space of time, especially sort of in 2019 when it was hell for leather, I'm going to write as many books as I can. And it was, I just outsourced everything in my life. I stopped going to the gym, I stopped watching television or reading books or doing anything like that, and you know, I would fall into the bath at the end of a long day and I'd be watching YouTube tutorials on this, that, or the other, or somebody's course on how to perfect your advertising or whatever. I hired a guy to sleep with my wife because I didn't have time with that.
So I have a question. You write a lot of cozies, and I'm always intrigued by cozy. What defines cozy in your world, like the tropes, the rules, and what have you?
Okay. I mean, that's hopefully I can answer that accurately. So essentially, cozy mystery is a mystery story where all of the violence is off screen. There'll be no profanity and there'll be no sex. So you can intimate that the sex is very much closed door. The violence typically, so the dead body, they will come across the dead body, but while killer might decide to fire a shot in the room on the page, you're not going to do the visceral brain matter exploding against the wall behind them. If you imagine an episode of Murder, She Wrote, or Midsummer Murders, or any one of those daytime Hallmark TV shows, it's that, where it's, if you're thinking about the rating for those and you're going to show these to little old ladies and children, you're doing that. So I will remove the expletive and say he uttered an expletive under his breath. Because that's what the scene requires, but you don't actually use the expletive on the page.
Just leave it off.
So. Do you have to have an old lady detective?
No, in fact, I don't.
Do you have to have an old lady in there somewhere?
No, but they are fun because there's several different, I guess, genres, subgenres within Cozy Mystery. One of them is animals, one of them is craft and hobbies. And so you've got a lot of people doing kind of witchcraft stuff, paranormal cozies, a lot of people doing animals where the animals are solving the mystery. I have two series where the animals play a predominant part and they sell really well. I think it depends how you do it because you can just add a lot of comedy, especially when you're giving the dog's opinion on the human owner who's an absolute idiot. Why can't he smell the clues? If we were to talk about how or why it is that I've had my success, a lot of it is my books are all the same brand. So they're all fast-paced, humorous mystery. So I write a lot of urban fantasy, but it's the same thing. It's urban fantasy, but they're trying to solve something, and I add in a lot of humor. And so people know that they're going to get this profanity-free, sex-free manuscript that they can enjoy reading. It's safe for all the family, and there's a lot of humor put into it. And I like doing that. I entertain myself no end trying to think up funny things for people to do.
That's interesting. So your style is a very common thread throughout these different genres. So you're not using pen names when you switch the genres because you feel like that you're giving over the same vibe.
No, absolutely not. No. I'm not bright enough for that.
Well, it sounds like you're giving over the same vibe. And a lot of people, I think more people cross genres than we think a lot of the time. So,
yeah, I didn't do it strategically. It wasn't me being clever. So I wrote an urban fantasy series, and it's urban fantasy, which has no magic in it and no monsters. So it's not urban fantasy, except it's urban fantasy, and except it sells really well in the urban fantasy genre. And basically what I've got is it's Jack Reacher trapped in an episode of Scooby-Doo, punching his way out of it.
There you go.
He's ex-military. He's kind of late 30s. Comes out of the army and opens a private investigation business. They mess up his ad copy, advertise him as a paranormal investigator. And while he's busy screaming at the newspaper who run his ad in the local area, his phone won't stop ringing because there's all these people who think, you know, my great aunt Ida's a witch and she's cursed me with impotency. And the guy next door to me is definitely a werewolf. And he winds up investigating all these cases. And somewhere in between all the bizarre and stupid, there's actually real crimes. And there's a serial killer in the first book with a vampire fetish. And he's running around with prosthetic teeth, biting people's throats out. And so there's this tangible sense of threat and danger. But at the same time, he doesn't have anyone to fall back on. So he winds up getting his mum involved. And his mother swings her knitting bag at the vampire's head at one point, and he winds up with a knitting needle and a ball of wool sticking out the top of his skull.
Wait a second. Well, that's a little graphic. How do you do that with not being graphic?
It's a knitting needle.
But that's just funny.
That is funny. But still, it's a knitting needle.
Yeah, you can get away with that. You can absolutely, yeah. And I play on the fringes. So, yeah, I've disobeyed almost every trope there is out there in the genres in which I've written and got away with it. I think because they're funny. I think because I obey enough of the tropes. But mostly, I mean, going back to that thing about deliberate stuff, none of it was strategically thought out in advance. I just did what I wanted to do and got away with it.
That's brilliant.
That's awesome, yeah. So
I think I've been lucky, but the books hopefully are fun. Certainly that's what people say they are, and that sells them well enough.
Well, they wouldn't be selling like they are if they weren't good. So obviously they are.
You have a huge following. I was looking at your, you have a Facebook group with, like, you know, that's gigantic compared to my little meatly one. I'd like to know what you do to kind of grow that out. Like, how do you get that following right there?
Well, you have to be really handsome to start.
Well, that's done for us then. Strike that off the to-do list.
No, I honestly, well, the readers, so there's links in the books, and the books sell in large numbers, so I think that's what brings a lot of them in. So it's all organic. Because there's ways of building your lists through funnels and bits and pieces, but and giving stuff away, and I don't think that you actually get people who are really interested. So that's all organic, and it's built up over a number of years. But you sell enough books, you get people that want to know more. They want to know it in advance, and so people sign up to hear all of that. And yeah, it builds up over time. I can quite easily remember starting my newsletter and there's nobody on it at all.
Yes. Yeah. I recall that too. I mean, I had nobody. So what I'm curious, like, what do you, I mean, being Cozies, I feel like that might be an older demographic. Is that your readers? Do you find?
No, absolutely is. But at the same time, I've got kids reading it. I have teenagers reading my books and loving them. My oldest protagonist is 78. He's a 78-year-old, curmudgeonly old man with a German Shepherd dog. And the two of them wind up solving crimes together separately, very much separately.
Nick, if you get a dog, you can be curmudgeonly and old.
Thank you.
But I have teenagers reading that series, even though the guy in it's nearly 80 years old. Again, because it's funny. It's told from almost a granddad perspective in many ways. But they're funny books. I don't think it matters that he's an older character.
Yeah, so I have a question about that. So it's always this conundrum with series, right? When you have a character, do you age them? Or is it just it's present day and they're always the same?
Mine are very much not moving forward in time very fast. So I'm.
Well, you write so fast, all the books happen in the same year. So.
Well, I'm on book 31 of my Patricia Fisher series, which has been described several times as Die Hard with Angela Lansbury in the lead role.
That's a great description.
My idea.
That is awesome.
Well, so that book 31, and we're just hitting sort of 7 months total time that's lapsed in her books.
It's tricky, right? When I started my series, my AJ Bailey series, which is 15 books in now, I was aging her because they weren't connected. Stories weren't connected, but the timeline sort of fit, right? So it was moving along. And then I realized, oh dear, she's aging. I put in 2 books out a year in that series. And so I've stalled her out at about 31. And she's just forever going to be 31 now. And I think I should have done that from the beginning.
Yeah, I think the readers will forgive you. I think it'll be fine. I don't know that they care enough. They want your characters to be wonderful. They're more interested in the story.
So, okay, to kind of circle back to the Facebook, like I saw you at 20 books. Obviously, we kind of hung out a little bit, but you know, you kind of become a little bit of the Facebook ad guru. Like everybody's like, "Oh, I'm doing it like Steve Higgs does." So.
One of many out there. If I were to be asked to blame my success on one thing that wasn't writing talent, it was my decision to not be beaten by the marketing. And I think that's what's missing from most authors who do not do well with books, provided, and let's assume that the baseline is their books are perfectly good, which a minimum viable standard. So they're perfectly good books. The bit that's missing is marketing. And if you can master that, and I'm not suggesting that's easy, but if you can master marketing, then you can sell your books, and you can sell a bad book with good marketing. And you might not find the reader then buys the next one, but you can make some money off of the first one.
I think that's completely true. It's that the art of the indie author is marketing. The writing books generally, we write books because we're okay at writing books, right? But it's the marketing that defines the career.
You've got to do something. Nobody's tuning to a TV channel they don't know exists. Nobody's buying a book they've never heard of.
You're advertising. I mean, like you have one, I think that references you to Terry Pratchett, probably your PI, I think maybe, but I've seen some of your ads come across and I'm like, those are great ads.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that turned out to be a very good marketing strategy and a good ad target, Terry Pratchett, because of course, Terry Pratchett is not putting any more content into the world anytime soon.
Yeah, that's a shame, but yes.
which is terrible, because in fact, just behind my head, there's a whole row of Terry Pratchett books because I absolutely adore him, but he's not producing anything else. So I simply offered up as an ad sort of caption, if you love the humorous fantasies of Terry Pratchett, I've got something for you. I mean, those weren't the exact words, but it was something similar to that. And without comparing myself to Terry Pratchett, because my books are nothing like his, unless you say, well, he wrote humorous fantasy and I write humorous fantasy. So they're similar in that way. And there's been a few people who have misread it and said, how dare you? But for the most part, those ads have worked out to be very successful in the sold a lot.
So mine is, I reference it, is Jack Reacher on a boat. It's a great tagline, gets a lot of things.
It's a great tagline.
But I do get a few like, that's not Jack Reacher. Well, as everybody compare, you know, I just hide those comments and move on. It's great because the fact is Lee Child can't write he's not writing 89 books. Like, you know, he's not writing that much. So he's putting out a book a year. So when number one thing all of our readers say is, as soon as we finish a book, is when's the next one coming out? You know, and I can't write one in 4 days. I've got to figure that out, how you can just sit there. Maybe I need a toilet right there under my seat.
I need to type faster. I can't type that fast. Literally, I'm a pecker, so, and it works. I'm a pecker. I just call myself a dick, but I type slowly. And my process is I'm thinking about the story as I'm typing. It's kind of unfolding and everything else. I think your brain works about, you know, you're on fast forward.
Everyone's different. And I say this to a lot of people is quantity is not quality. If I could write one book a year and make the same amount of money from it, then I probably would. No, I wouldn't, what we're talking about. But there are people out there pulling in very good money, writing far, far fewer books than me. And actually, Carla Stone is one of them. She has written far fewer books than me and is doing amazingly.
And she's a brilliant writer anyway. Like her stories are just phenomenal.
No, absolutely. And she might get TV deals and goodness knows what else yet. So she's a shining example to everybody out there. You don't have to write lots and lots of books. Nobody should look at the amount of books I've written and feel that that's what they need to achieve, because that's not necessary at all. Write the best thing that you can and then market it as best you can. I have voracious readers and I'm able to churn out books relatively quickly. So that's what I do.
So a question we like to ask our guests is, and you may have sort of pseudo answered this already, is, but what do you think is your author superpower? What's the one thing you'd say is the best thing that you do?
Complete and utter refusal to be beaten. That's what got me here. And willingness to sacrifice everything in my life to get to this point. My superpower to get here was very much, I understand what it is that I don't know, which is pretty much everything. And I went out and tackled all of that one thing at a time. And all the information's out there. You've just got to go in with the attitude of, I don't know how to do this yet. And then you can go and learn it. Everyone, you know, it's all learnable.
There is a lot of information out there, because there's also a lot of everybody's thrown out their self-titled guru stuff. And I always kind of step back and go, okay, well, all right, they say to do this, but oh wait, their book sales are just they're terrible. So am I gonna listen to them? That's the other thing. And so for authors starting out, I think that's something you have to think about, is like, who are you listening to and pay attention to what they have to say. So
I think two things about that too, that are really important, is the fact that there's no one way on virtually every subject. There's no one way. It varies greatly. And number two is it is changing constantly. I mean, really quickly, things change and move. Don't you think?
My advice to people getting into this now, and they've got a couple of books under their belt, or they're certainly going to write those books, get into the conferences, go and meet people, go and network, go and ask those questions one-on-one. There are a lot of courses out there, and there's a few that we could probably rattle off fairly quickly that are considered kind of the prime ones. There's recognized courses, and there's books by certain authors that will lead you stage by stage, which in many ways, not only are they far cheaper, but they're far easier to understand and use as reference material. And that's certainly how I started out, was buying some of the books out there that are about how to do Facebook ads, about how to set up your website, about how to run your newsletter. Read those books, because all the secrets are in there. But don't believe that there's one way to do anything, because that's not true. And there's a lot of talk about writing to market, which I don't think is a bad thing to do at all. There is also the opportunity for new works to come, disruptive new genres, if you like. Lit RPG did not exist all that many years ago, and Lit RPG is big news now.
So what do you think are, for you, as in your career, and obviously, like you say, the idea of not giving up, not being beaten, but what was the biggest game changer where you went, okay, whoa, that's what I needed to do right there? I mean, was it the writing 30 books in a year? Was it the mastering the marketing?
The mastering marketing, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think when I quit my job in that September of 2019, I think I was just on the cusp of 20 books. I think I just about got 20 books out, and I was making, $5,000-$6,000 a month in sales, which wasn't anywhere near enough. And I wasn't spending a lot of money on marketing. And it was recognizing that, and I've actually, I talk on this at conferences and show graphs and stuff of my ad spend versus my income. And as I doubled my, generally, as I doubled my ad spend, I would double my income. But they were not a straight line graph. So you've gone from spending, let's say, $4,000 in a month and making $20,000 to spending $8,000 in a month and making $40,000. So you've doubled both things, but suddenly the income's not $16,000, it's $32,000. And that's not even the same sport. And when, especially when you scale that up again, and suddenly you're making $150,000 in a month, and it's, you know, it's you have to spend money to make money. You've got to learn this stuff along the way, and you can't just start spending huge amounts of money on ads. Partly because you probably haven't got that kind of money lying around in the first place, but also because if you do that, you're just going to waste it all. So it's teaching yourself and spending the time learning the platforms. You have to give yourself enough time to learn it so that it's become almost like an automatic skill. And that was, I think where I started to succeed was I was watching the data and testing things out so much that I started to see where it was that I was. I mean, because you read all the books and you absorb a certain amount of knowledge, but that all that does is get you to the place where you can then learn properly. That's where things started to change for me. Was, yeah, I had enough books out there, but people weren't reading them in a big enough volume because I wasn't reaching a big enough audience. And it was then reaching that big enough audience that made the change. And it was pushing additional money into that as the income was going up. I was churning money back into growing my ad spend, reinvesting that income.
So what's coming out next for you?
I have book 30 in my Patricia Fisher series, which is finished and I think comes out on the 19th. I am currently writing book 23. I have book 23 in my original Blue Moon series, which has become quite the large expanded universe with four spin-off series that are being written by other very talented urban fantasy authors, set in various locations around the world. I'm writing book 23, so that's called Modern Fairy Tale. I'm also 20% of the way through a book that I'm writing with my 8-year-old son called We Are Not Meat, which is a time travel dinosaur adventure.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, that sounds so cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I did, you know, he's great because, you know, kids are, aren't they anyway? But yeah, he's my eldest. He's 8 years old. He's dinosaur mad. And we got talking about books, because he's well aware of what it is that I do, and he's very keen to write a book. And so over the course of about an hour, we devised a 3-book arc, and we're writing that together. I force him to sit down and actually write stuff and punctuate it correctly. So he's 8 years old, and he knows where the apostrophe goes.
Oh, I'm glad he does, because I don't. I sprinkle, and my editor then unsprinkles.
He uses that Christopher Walken comma between every word, like, you know, it's every, yeah. Now, so your 8-year-old, do you think, is that something he's keen to be a writer?
Well, no, he's determined to be a paleontologist, which I think if that's his passion, he absolutely should be. But at the same time, I think he can probably write. I mean, you'll have to write anyway.
He'll have to publish papers.
If you're going to be in that arena, you'll have to publish papers. I think he could make a very worthwhile living writing some fiction at the same time that would empower his digs, etc. So I'm sort of pushing him down that direction. I would very much like him to write, if for no other reason than it's the most rewarding career I could ever come up
with. Amen.
So Doug, you got a wheel, spin it.
We have our last question for you today, which comes off of our wheel of it's a lot of fun. So you can hear it.
Oh, it's high tech shit we have going on here.
Spin it around. All right. Our question for you today is, based on your own experience, but what would you give your 8-year-old son as a definition for what success is?
That's whatever an individual determines it to be. Because that could be, if success is, I want to write this book, I've got this story in my head, and it's going to take me 4 years or whatever that is, it's going to take me 44 years to write this book, but you've done it. And that's, if you never do anything else with it, and you've written a book, and you deem that to be success, then you are successful. Nobody else should be able to define what is successful for you, for an individual. Nobody else should be able to tell that person that they're not successful. I would take issue with somebody who was telling another author that they were not successful because they, you know, you don't have to be commercially successful. You don't have to be making money to deem that you are successful in what it was that you set out to do. So, yes, commercially successful, you can't put a number on that either.
Steve, it's been wonderful having you on. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, gentlemen. See you again soon.
What an interesting guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of information too, man.
He does. It's interesting, right? So, I mean, he's incredibly focused and analytical, and then he writes these really quirky stories.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's so great.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, and I think he's got, I mean, such a valid point. Like, you can write books, and I know people who've written amazing books that don't move on Amazon because they don't know how to market, or they don't want to market, or they're scared of marketing. And I think like he says, you have to be able, it's so much more than just writing.
Big time, big time. There are a lot of mediocre books out there selling a shit ton because they're marketed really well.
Thank you.
And there's I wasn't pointing at you because you're not that great at the marketing. No, so obviously, I wasn't talking about you. So no, you're pretty good. But the at writing the books and doing the marketing. But there's also some fantastic novels out there that nobody knows about.
Absolutely.
They're just sitting there, right? Because, and it's tricky because the, you know, creatives aren't necessarily marketers, and but it's such a crucial part. And I think one of the things we touched on and talked about with him, it was there's lots of information out there. There's a lot of people putting out a lot of information, and there's a lot of good stuff. But I think that the most important thing is that there's no golden ticket, right? There's no massive shortcuts. And the biggest thing you can take away, because everything moves so quickly and it's going to be different for one person in this genre and this corner of this genre than it's going to be from this other person, is the process. I think the process is the things that you need to take away. When you're doing Amazon ads, there's a way to test those Amazon ads. And I think we've all learned the hard way that you've got to test that stuff. What you think up front, what feels right, that's going to appeal to the reader across and what the Facebook magic algorithm decides will send to the right people is not necessarily what you feel is that image and that blurb. Maybe it's not. So you've got to try a wide variety of things and test them properly. And I think that's true in everything, all these classes and everything.
There's also this mindset. And, you know, somebody described it once, you know, they say, hey, what's that secret? And you go, well, there's no real secret. I mean, I worked my ass off to get here. Whoa, that's cool. That's awesome. You know, so it's all about this mindset. But then they'll follow it up, and everybody wants that magic to push.
Magic
and
bullet.
There is no magic bullet. There is no magic button. It is, you know, there are people who have found it. I mean, there is one out there. It's just, you're not going to find it.
It's tough to do everything. There's not enough hours in the day. And again, like you say, if you're going to do it right, you can't do everything, right? So like for me, I don't want to do TikTok. I don't understand it. I'm not on there to do the content properly. I just don't feel like I can put my best foot forward. So I don't. I concentrate in other areas. And that's okay. I think it's really hard. I don't think you'll find anybody who's absolutely nailing every outlet there is, especially all the social media options, unless they've got somebody or a team working for them, and then that's a little different. All right, what's going on in your world at the moment, Douglas Pratt?
Just released Red Light at Night, which is the newest Chase Gordon series in his series, and it's doing real well.
As it should be. It's fantastic.
And what have you got going on?
I'm at Nora, writing Nora at the moment, which I love doing. It's Relentless Summer. It's on pre-order, folks. So
grab it. You gotta love Nora. So
You can grab it anytime, but I'm loving it. Yeah. It's good. It's a punchy one.
Well, hey, everybody, thank you all for joining us. Please make sure you check out the show notes for links to our guest information. We got, Steve's website on there, and you can check out his books.
Look for new episodes every 2 weeks. And until next time, be cool to each other.
Fair winds and following seas.
You've been listening to the Two Authors Podcast with Nicholas Harvey and Douglas Pratt. Subscribe on your favorite platform for alerts on new shows coming every 2 weeks.